This oral history is with Dr. Leland Asa, and we're recording it at Trinity Western College on January the 29th, 1983. I'm very happy to have this opportunity to speak with you, Dr. Asa, and I wonder if you might start out by giving me some information about your boyhood and family background.
All right. I was born in Western Nebraska, just north of a little town called Morrill, on a farm owned by my grandfather, and lived on by my father, and farmed by my father. I grew up there for 2 or 3 years, and then we moved around quite a bit as it was Depression time, and work and employment were a little bit hard, and we stayed basically in the area until I was in grade 5, at which time we moved to Colorado. That was probably about 1940 or 41 when we went to Colorado, and my father previously had operated a lumber yard, a trucking line, creamery, and had done some farming. But he decided he wanted to go into electronics, and the war had come or was coming very soon, and so he went again training in electronics at Greeley, Colorado. And after a period of time there, he went to Omaha and then to Chicago, Illinois, where he continued his training. And I was sometimes with him, and sometimes I was with my relatives when housing was hard to find because of the demands during the war. Then he was transferred to Kansas City, and I went to Colorado to live with my grandmother until the end of the war, and then we all moved to Torrington, Wyoming, where I graduated from high school.
And what was your Christian background? When did you come to hear of Christ, or did you come from a Christian home?
Well, we didn't go to church a lot. I was sent to Sunday school from time to time at the local Methodist church. But when I became a Christian was basically when I visited in the farm, or on the farm where my uncle lived. Mm-hmm. The American Sunday School Union had come in and started a Sunday school. And I loved the farm and the horses and the farming, so I used to go there as often as I could, and they made me go to church on Sundays with them. And so it was through there, when I was about 12 or 13, that I became a Christian.
Mm-hmm. Were they good Christian examples for you?
Yes, I think they had an awful lot of influence in my life as far as Christian dedication and Christian life is concerned, because before I knew what morality was, I didn't know a reason for it. Mm-hmm. Until they became Christians and I saw a kind of a role model in them.
Mm-hmm. And when did you actually accept Christ, and when did he influence your life?
Well, I accepted Christ when a visiting evangelist, an itinerant preacher, was coming through in their rural church. I mentioned around 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. And really, my life didn't do too much differently at that particular time. It was more about the time I was grade 11, finishing grade 11, that I attended a summer Bible camp and made a dedication of my life there to Christian work, mm-hmm. or to at least being open to the Lord's leading. And at that time, I also decided to attend a Christian college. So during my grade 12 year, I applied at 3 of them, the Kansas City Bible College and Northwestern College in Minneapolis and Wheaton College in Illinois. I was accepted to go to each, but another aunt influenced me to go to Northwestern because Billy Graham was president at the time, and she thought highly of him, as did most people, so I went there.
Did you meet Billy Graham?
Not really personally. He was around, and I saw him, but to know him on a personal basis, no.
Wasn't this the time when he was doing great revival lectures all over the States?
He was just getting started then. He had been in Los Angeles and had become known nationally. And then he was going to Seattle, I believe, during those years and several other places, and had gained prominence as an evangelist during those years, early 50s, late 49. But I had began in 50, and he was away from the college an awful lot at that time because of the evangelistic campaigns.
And you met your wife at this college?
No, I met her at the Bible camp. She was a student at university, or in the States it would have been known as Chandon State College at the time. She attended the Bible camp on a weekend, and I met her there. I was interested in her and kept contact with her, and married her after 2 years of college. And she then attended the college as well, so we were both students at the same time, full time, and both working a lot of the time, 20 to 30 hours a week, as well as going to school.
And so what did you complete then in that?
I graduated in 1954 with a Bible or religious studies major, and she was taking an education major and wasn't finished. She didn't finish until 1955, so I stayed around waiting for her to finish and took seminary while she was finishing. But then by the time she finished, I was interested enough in seminary that I wanted to stay and finish it. And so she, then waiting for me to finish the seminary, went to McAllister College and earned her master's degree in education and psychology. But then the Northwestern Seminary closed in 1956, so we moved to Chicago to attend Trinity, the Evangelical Free Church School in Chicago, and finished my last year of seminary there.
And was this really your first contact then with the Evangelical Free Church?
No, my first contact with Evangelical Free Church was in 1950 in the fall when I attended Central Free, where Arley Bragg was pastor in Minneapolis. I had never heard of the Free Church before then. There was none in my hometown.
Yeah. And yet, coming from farming communities, there were a lot of Free Churches. Well, maybe not in those days.
Well, there were, but they were more in the eastern Nebraska, where you found the Swedish people.
Oh, yes. It was more ethnic then.
Yes, it was. It was Swedish, Norwegian, Danish. But I don't think there were any of them much west of the Holridge area at that time. Holridge, Nebraska, that is.
And you finished seminary then at Trinity, and what happened then in your life? You were married then.
Yes. My wife had been teaching school in Bensonville, Illinois for a year while I finished. And then when I graduated in 1957, immediately after I graduated, she had finished up a last course she needed for a master's in the Illinois area. So we drove back to Minneapolis, and she went through the ceremony there. Mm-hmm. For her master's, although she had completed most of it earlier. And then we talked to the Free Church. We had applied to go to the mission field during my last year of seminary, but that did not work out. So we were offered three places to work in Christian work. One was on the Canadian border between Minnesota and I believe it would have been Manitoba. Mm-hmm. And one in southern Minnesota, at St. James, Minnesota, and one at Omaha. The two in Minnesota were churches. The one in Omaha was nothing. We were offered a chance to help start a church there, but because Omaha was a large medical center with the University of Nebraska Medical School there, and because my wife needed some medical help, we decided to go to the Omaha opportunity.
And you were there for 4 years, wasn't it?
We were there from 1957 to 1961. We left in about August of 1961.
And that was to come to Trinity?
No, that was to go to the University of Wyoming for 1 year.
Oh, right, yes. Okay.
But while I was in Omaha, I worked at the church. I worked some at the University of Nebraska psychiatric unit, and I also completed a master's degree in psychology at the University of Nebraska in Omaha.
Did you get a diploma there?
I had a degree, and a master's degree, yes. And I, in 1959, was aware that Trinity was starting because it was approved at the annual Free Church Conference in Denver that I had attended. And then I had talked to Dr. Arnold Olson about the possibility of encouraged me. So then I drove to Minneapolis to talk to Cal Hansen about it, and Cal encouraged me and arranged for me to be part of the original faculty and administration.
But so that was a thrill. Had the planting of the church, or the beginning of the church in Nebraska, in Omaha, had that been successful? And I forgot to ask you, were you pastoring there?
Yes, it was church planting or getting it started. Yes, while I was there, we were able to begin a congregation. We built a parsonage and a nice brick church building, which is still going very well today.
Yeah. And then this challenge came up with Trinity Western. So
I thought if I was going to be in college education, I'd like to have a doctorate, so I applied to several schools. And the University of Wyoming offered me financial aid and a job, so I accepted and began my doctorate at Wyoming in psychology. Mm-hmm. We were there 1 year doing coursework, collecting data for dissertation, learning French, studying statistics, and generally getting as much done as possible in 1 year, because we had to be in Langley in the fall of 1962 in order to be here for the opening of the school.
Mm-hmm. And I'd sure like to hear about some of the first days in Trinity Western, or it was Trinity Junior College.
It was Trinity Junior College then, because it was a two-year program. Well, when we arrived, we were greeted first by David Enerson, who has been a very, very important factor in the background of the college. We moved on to campus and lived in a house right at the entrance of the campus for 2 years. The first few days were rather hectic. The beds weren't here, the kitchen wasn't ready, the library wasn't ready, the chapel wasn't finished. But through the efforts of many, many people, local church people and college people, we finished the wiring, finished putting down floors. David Enerson, among others, was hammering down floors and dormitories. We personally brought some of our beds down for students to use until the beds were cured.
That's what I call real dedication.
We set up sawhorses and plywood to use as tables in one of the dormitories for science lab tables to begin with.
Is Dr. Walters here?
Dr. Walters was here. Mm-hmm. Richard Walters. Leslie Garrison. Edna Modig was librarian. Cal Hansen was president. Enoch Mattson was academic dean and registrar. Mm-hmm. Benno Friesen was instructor in history and in English. My wife taught education and Christian education.
I think in those days probably everyone had two or three jobs.
Yes.
I was out of necessity.
Dean of students, and I taught sociology and psychology and did the testing program. Oh.
Mm-hmm. And what other figures were prominent in the early days? Yeah.
Well, there were the board of governors, of course, were very important. I, from memory, can't recall who all the members were. I'm sure that's available from other sources.
Yes.
Local pastors were helpful. The Langley pastor, the Johnston Heights pastor. The Abbotsford Church was just getting going at the time.
And what about Carl Fosmer?
His time was a little before, I think, in the organizing days. I don't recall. He was around from time to time, but I think his contribution came a little earlier, before the actual opening of college.
Yeah, that probably is true. I think he was district superintendent and had a very large area.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In the early days of college, and probably was caught up in that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what about Vernon Strombeck?
Vernon Strombeck was important in two areas, visible areas, plus he was also a counselor to Cal Hansen, in a sense. Vernon Strombeck, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, felt that the Lord had called him to do something as far as the library at Trinity was concerned. And he personally accepted book lists that we sent to him, ordered the books out of his own funds, and had them sent to Trinity Junior College at the time. He also gave money toward the construction of the library and toward the furnishing of the library. Mm-hmm. And when it was time to expand it, he came back and made another contribution in helping to expand the library. In fact, not only did he help, I think he paid for most of it himself, if not all of it. And then he also offered a matching gift, because we're desperate for classroom facilities. We were teaching in what were supposed to be dormitories. We were clearing out the dining hall and giving lectures there because of lack of space. And so he offered to match dollar for dollar what we could raise to build a arts and science building. And so I personally, others, Cal Hansen especially, traveled to churches asking for help to match our matching dollars. Mm-hmm. I spoke to churches in the Seattle area and Portland area and other areas helping to raise matching dollars. And at the end of the challenge period, we had enough to construct the Arts and Science building and finish the upper story. Mm-hmm. And we had some donations from the Brown Morris Company to furnish the science labs. Brown Morris Company was owned by some Free Church people in Michigan, I believe. They manufactured what you might call a Cadillac of science equipment, and they made available some science equipment for us. Excellent equipment, which is still in place and still being used today. And that was about 1964 or 65, I believe, that was installed. Mm-hmm. And later, Sam Reed, who was building and grounds man, and others made a large contribution toward finishing the lower part of the mm-hmm. arts and science building.
Would this be lending their time and materials? Or was this
Sam
financial?
Reed was a full-time employee here.
Oh, yes.
Did the work. Mm-hmm. There were others that helped as well. He did part of it, and others did part of it.
In those early days when you started, and there was a few dorms and few buildings on campus, the old barn and steel cap house. Did you really ever feel really discouraged that the college would not make it, or was there a high hope? So
I always felt that the college would make it in those days. I wondered at times whether Cal Hansen felt so, and I think he was under more pressure than some of the others, but mm-hmm. we took it as a challenge. In fact, Dale Winder, who was one of the first students here, and I and several others went down to the old barn and found that the loft had holes in it that one could fall through. So we took up old boards and put down new boards where the holes were, and patched the floor, and with the help of Sam Reed, in fact, he probably did most of the work, put up basketball hoops and strung lights, and we had what we called a barnasium.
Oh, yes. I've seen that word and used in pictures.
Later, some of the people from the Free Church in Vancouver brought out plywood and put it around the walls to shield the players from the beams that stuck out into the playing area.
I know. I saw one comment that was quite funny. It was official size basketball in length, but not in width.
That's exactly true. We had plenty of length, but not enough width. Later, people came out and put down a nice plywood floor, and it was varnished, and mm-hmm. the stripes were put on for volleyball and for basketball, and it served quite adequately. Mm-hmm. Better lights were put in. I took my shotgun down sometimes and shot the sparrows out of it to keep the floors clean. Otherwise, it was a terrible mess if the birds were allowed in it.
Were there any other little creatures running around that bothered the campus in those days?
Yes. Have you heard of the skunks?
No.
I was appointed, I think, unofficial or official skunk exterminator. George Ney rode his motorcycle into the garage by the seal cap house and encountered a skunk. He didn't know what it was, and when he went to the dorm, he wasn't smelling too well, and the other students explained to him what a skunk was and kicked him out of the dorm. I helped get rid of the skunks in several places. They were all over and quite a nuisance for a period.
Yeah. Was the what we now know as the lake, was that kind of swampy at that time? Or?
Down below?
Yes, or is that where the skunks?
Well, no, it was. It could be used as pasture land in the summer, or grass could be cut for hay off of it. Mm-hmm. But in the winter, of course, it covered with water when the Salmon River rose. Mm-hmm. But the circle out here, let's see, it would be across from what's now the Thompson Building, and at the front of the chapel was a swamp full of frogs. One of the funniest stories to me was that my wife was in the right wing of it, which was the library at the time, preparing for a class late at night. She came out of the building and shut off all the lights. It was one of those foggy, dark nights with no moon and no stars. And she started walking toward our pickup, which was parked in front of the library, and missed it because it was so dark. And then she couldn't find it. She couldn't find her way back to the library. And in a few moments of wandering around in the total black darkness trying to find the pickup, she was standing in the swamp. And she tried to get out of that, and both boots came off, and she lost her boots. Eventually, by feeling, she found the pickup and turned the lights on, and by backing the pickup around and shining them into the swamp, she was able to retrieve her boots. But there were no light. There was almost no lighting on campus at the time, and at night it was very, very dark.
We have a lot of moles here, even today.
They've always been here.
They have.
They were here.
Were there any cows or anything?
Yes. The area where the dining hall is now, and to the toward the freeway from the Thompson mm-hmm. Building, we rented for pasture, and there were Holstein cattle kept there, and they sometimes got out of the fence and wandered about the campus, and Sam Reed or someone had to drive the cows out of the campus and back into the pasture from time to time.
You had to be a bit of a cowboy, too.
Right.
Oh, I saw a picture of someone horseback riding, and I just wondered if there was any... Was that one of the activities?
That was, could have been me.
Oh.
I was embarrassed once during a board meeting. One of the girls had brought a horse onto campus, and being from Wyoming, I thought I should show my cowboy promise, and I galloped the horse rapidly around the chapel three times while the board was meeting, but they kept me on anyway.
Oh, there goes Asa.
I also had on a suit, a coat, and a tie at the time.
Oh, I wish we had that picture. I'm not sure.
I think there is a picture of that somewhere. I don't know where.
Find it. What else about the early days? I guess there weren't too many students.
17 the first year. One of my early satisfactions was helping to set up some of the traditions or some mm-hmm. of the events that would later become traditional. I helped the students to set up student government, helped mm-hmm. them to build a constitution, helped them to select school colors. Actually, the way the school colors came, which are brown and gold, as you know, mm-hmm. I had been at the University of Wyoming the year before, and the colors there were brown and gold, and I had a bit of partiality, and I suggested brown and gold, and they seemed to accept that. And that first year, they designated them as school colors, and for these 21 years, they've survived. The students were looking for a name for their athletic teams, they cast around and chose the name Spartans the first year.
Oh, I'd really be interested in knowing why that, what was behind that. I think it's an excellent name, and they were an excellent team.
I think there were a couple of factors. One was we were in a sort of a rough situation here, mm-hmm. and we didn't have a lot of facilities and a lot of plushness, and perhaps the name Spartans came out of that. Of course, there's an American team in Michigan called the Spartans, or American University, mm-hmm. uses that name, and perhaps they were familiar with that. Mm-hmm. I, I couldn't say exactly. I don't know if anybody really knows why the name was adopted, except that it had a nice ring to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. And a lot of our students then were Americans, and they still are. That seems to have survived.
Quite a few, partly because Cal Hansen was well known in the United States mm-hmm. as a Free Church missionary to Japan, and a lot yes. of people had faith in him mm-hmm. and were friends of him or of his father, and he attracted, I think, quite a few people. Mm-hmm. During that time, we also started a school newspaper of sorts. I asked Ben Friesen to start a college choir. He was the first choir director. I asked Les Garrison to be sponsored to the yearbook, and he operated and did a very good job on the yearbook the first few years.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
So we started all of those traditions out of that first year or two, which are carried on today. Mm-hmm.
And there seemed to be a lot of activities too. I guess some of it was fundraising, but I've seen pictures of workathons and walkathons.
We started out with walkathons. We would walk to the Peace Arch.
Yes.
And get pledges to raise money for special projects, such as, I'm not sure what the projects were now, I think they were something like library books. Mm-hmm. Later it was thought by some people that instead of just walking we should do something constructive, and so we had what we call workathons, mm-hmm. and the students would pledge so many hours of work in return for a contribution for a project. Mm-hmm. And then we had other workathons where we would just declare a holiday on campus and do a spring cleanup of the campus, mowing grass, trimming trees. One year, the faculty members during that, Dick Walters and Ben Friesen and Les Garrison, perhaps Cal Hansen, and I ran the cement in front of the chapel.
Oh, yeah.
Previously, there were nothing but rocks about 3 inches in diameter, and women with heels had an awful time getting into the chapel without the rocks rolling into their feet, so we put the cement down one day.
Mm-hmm.
But that was typical. Les Garrison kept the clocks operating.
Mm-hmm.
King's College in Vancouver gave us a truckload of material. I went in and to King's College and drove back, and some of them were benches and some of them were mimeograph machines. One of them happened to be a timer clock for bells, and Les Garrison set that bell clock up so we had a bell that would ring at the end of the hour.
Oh.
And he kept that running.
Oh, that's good. You know, it's still a bit like that today. When I started the archives, it was just a room, unfinished, in every way. And of course, we were putting shelves in, and I just got to thinking, you know, it's not a very big room. Maybe there's a piece of carpet. And we found out there was a piece of carpet that would fit. Uh-huh. And then I thought, well, if we're putting in carpet, that takes a day. We might as well paint the walls.
Oh, yeah.
And before you know it, we had carpeted and painted, and uh-huh. and just before the stacks went in. But we were doing it ourselves. And I don't mind that a bit. I think that's great. You really get into the spirit of things.
Each person in those early days seemed to have a particular skill. Like some people had a bit of a carpenter skill. Les Garrison had an skill at electronics and electricity. Other people had other skills, and each one of us would get called on from time to time to go out of the classroom and do something that might be in our specialty.
God had that all worked out, eh?
I even was called to fly an airplane from, it was Salem, Oregon to the Langley Airport. As part of the extracurricular skills that was donated by, I believe his name was Roy Wood, to the college.
Oh, I did hear about that. I think I read that yesterday in some of the papers I was looking through. And yes, it was just a gift. And
mm-hmm.
Was that the beginning of the aviation program?
No, that had nothing to do with the aviation. It was just a gift to the college to do whatever the college wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a Mooney aircraft, which is not a basic trainer necessarily, and so the aircraft was sold to a local plumber, I believe, in Langley, and the money put toward the funds on the campus.
That was a nice gift. So you have your pilot's license?
Yes.
What about Robert Thompson? His contributions were maybe more in off campus and maybe in the consultant type area?
In the early years, his contributions were more off campus and consulting. Although he was a speaker at some campus events, which I recall the first time I met him and heard him, we had a banquet, a fundraising banquet, which was held in the Langley High School Gymnasium. And he was the main speaker. Then later, when he left Parliament, he came to Langley and taught summer school courses, and then later taught courses, I believe, in the winter school, served as development officer, raising funds, traveling for the college. He's made a lot of contributions, negotiated funds and funds for special projects like hiking trails and the dike around the lake on the lower campus.
I think he was probably really instrumental, too, in having the college change from a two-year program to a four-year program.
I think he helped in that. I think that's also a vision Neil Snyder had.
Oh, yes.
Some of us dreamed about it, but to really put... I left the campus in 1975, in January, to become professor at Westmont College in Santa Barbara. And when I left as academic dean, I had been dean between 1969 and 1975, January. We were still a two-year college, and just as I left, I started to put into place the business program and the aviation program. But then the four-year program was not really even envisioned at that time. It was a dream, but the dream seemed a long way off. I think Craig Seaton had an awful lot to do with that after I left, and I think Neil Snyder was a pusher in that area, too.
I don't know too much about Craig Seaton's background.
He came after I left, and he served as academic dean for a period of time, and I think his great contribution was negotiations with the provincial government to get the charter for the university status. But again, that was after I was gone, and I'm not that familiar with details of what he did.
It wasn't too long after you left that they had that. Was it 1976? Or 77?
I don't know when that started. It's been several years now. I couldn't tell you when it actually... It was phased in. The charter was granted, and then the program was phased in, like the third year, and then the fourth year, and then the programs were expanded, sometimes one or two at a time.
And so are you quite happy in your work at the present time? You're on the Board of Governors?
Yes, I'm in my second term, and it is satisfying to still be associated with the college. It's basically 21 years later.
Yes.
We saw our kids grow up in the area. One of them was born in the area, and the other one was born before we got here. And so we had the ties, a lot of ties. We were very close to the people in the Johnston Heights Evangelical Free Church, and still consider them some of our closest friends. And the Lower Mainland is probably as much a home to me as any place I've lived, in the sense that our family sort of grew up here.
Do you miss Canada at all? Or?
Oh yes, I miss the Lower Mainland especially.
Yeah.
There were lots of things that we did here that probably don't get into the books, which ties a person to the area. For example, in the early days, Dick Goodsell, Dick Walters, Les Garrison, some of the others would, along with myself, would load up a couple of vans and go fishing the day after graduation. And we would go to Jervis Inlet and fish for salmon as a faculty for a few days. Or we would go to a lake in the interior fishing for a few days. after the academic year was finished, we did things together like that.
And those are good times when you have time to spend and just enjoy the company and the quietness of it all. And,
kind of reflect a little bit. And
that's right.
It was interesting and rewarding both.
When you say you did interesting things together, I wondered if the faculty ever put skits on for the students. Were there any fun things?
Yes,
like that?
That occurred. I think there was probably one faculty member, though, who was considered more of a professional. The rest of us were not asked that often, and were more hams. But John Woodland, at every special occasion, was asked to write poetry, and he involved all of us in one way or another in his poems.
He was good. He wrote a poem for Cal Hansen when he returned.
Did he?
Is that the same John Woodland who's in the library in Westminster?
No. John Woodland is still here on the faculty.
Oh.
And I think for the archives, if you could get copies of those old poems, if he still has them, dating way back into the mid-60s, you find out a lot about the faculty, because he brought out the humorous side of each faculty member in his poems. And I don't know where they are or if he even has them, but if he does have them, they were excellent. They might even make a history of the faculty on the humorous side.
That would be good. Well, I'm looking forward to making up a little booklet at, probably in June or July of this year. So I'll be using a lot of pictures and things like that to. Maybe if you know anyone and can encourage them to send me things, that would be nice.
All right. That
Mark, do you have anything?
I have a wealth of pictures in the old campus that probably I could dig out and contribute to the archives.
Oh.
The old house at the entrance that we lived in, I have a number of pictures of that. The old garage that was there, the house that was on blocks that we burned. Well, we didn't burn it down. We asked the Fort Langley, or not the Fort Langley, the Milner, I believe. It was the Milner Fire Department to come and burn the old house, which was an eyesore. Yes, they had to spray our roof to keep our roof from burning, because it was rather close.
Those are
a few of the events.
How about your wife and family these days? Are they all in good health? And I guess your family's grown up.
Yes, my wife is now a real estate broker in California. She gave up teaching after she left. Well, she actually gave up teaching while she was still here at Trinity and went into the real estate business. And personally, she has made, I think, some significant contributions to the college. She and special funds she gave out of her earnings in real estate, contributions toward a boardroom table, toward various and sundry pieces of equipment that were needed, which otherwise couldn't be purchased. She has continued to help make donations to college out of her real estate brokerage business. Our daughter, who used to play in the dorm to the students as a child, is now a registered nurse working in Denver and married. Our son, who was born while we were here at the college, is now a first-year student at Westmont College in Santa Barbara.
Oh, and is he, what are his aspirations to be
well,
in the ministry at all? Or?
He's not sure. He's thinking of chemical engineering at, the point, at this point. But at that age, there's goals and aspirations change, so I want to leave him that room to change if
That's
he decides
right.
to.
That's the Westmont is a liberal arts college. Is it a 2-year program or a 4-year?
No, it's a 4-year degree granting institution with majors in areas such as psychology, history, sociology, religious studies, biology, chemistry, mathematics, computer science, the general.
So very similar then to what we have here.
Yes.
Are there as many students as more? Or?
There are just a few more. There are about 935 students at Westmont, and I believe there are just over 800 here.
very interesting interview, and I thank you very much for spending this time today.
All right. Well, it was my pleasure.
Thank you.
We're just going to talk for a minute about Dave Tweest, as Dr. Asa actually hired Dave. And what year was that?
I don't recall the year exactly. It must have been around 1969 or 1970. But we were desperate for a director of the library who had vision and who had experience. Mm-hmm. And Dave Tweest's name was given to us. And I'd corresponded with him a little bit, and during the summer I was in Colorado. He was at the time at Sterling College in Colorado, and so I found located where he was. He was directing a Bible camp in the mountains of Colorado, and I found directions on how to get to the camp, and I drove to the camp and met Dave and discussed the possibilities of coming to Trinity, and he seemed open to the idea. It seemed that he felt he could make a better contribution to the life of young people mm-hmm. in this kind of a setting, and so he consented to come, for which we were thankful. And Dave may hear this, but it's the truth, and I'm not flattering, but Dave is one of the, has made one tremendous contribution to the library. I recall I've had to cut his budget when I was dean here because we just couldn't balance, and he did the best he could and did a marvelous job with what he had. Mm-hmm. I recall also before he was even on campus, we flew him up here to help with the expansion, to help look at the plans and so on, that when Starnbeck was adding an addition to the library, and Dave had input at that time.
Mm-hmm. I think Dave is wonderful for being able to have grants for different projects. He just seems mm-hmm. to know how to go about finding out where these grants are available and then getting them. He's done a lot in that area.
I think one of the key personnel over the years has been Dave Tweest, and yet off campus at least, people really don't hear his name that much or know about the contributions he's made. But just for my part, in this oral history, I would certainly recognize his contributions.
That's nice. I can say too that he's the best boss that I've ever worked for in many, many years in the library work.
Very good. Mm. Glad to add that note to the tape.
Thank you.